It has no meaning to be concerned about the length of your time that it may take to refine this instinctual sense of something more into a price that ultimately makes immediate contact with the mystery which lies beyond all information. 57 We need to be sure that we are not rushing ourselves metaphysically, that we are giving full respect to that which the moment has for us, regardless of how small or large that yield of the moment seems. Much opens to the more penetrating gaze, at unpredictable moments, out of nowhere. There are the strong trade winds of destiny, those that blow from forever, and there are the delightful, seasonal, unpredictable whims of spirit that offer the chance and change that marks the unique experience of being a conscious individual given the gift of free will. Metaphysically speaking, the dance between destiny and free will provides a way of thinking about those whims which, if the spontaneous, expressive self, that meaningful, substantive self to which that question about hurrying up has reference, for the blurring of experience through rushing too much is not simply a physical phenomenon, but also a spiritual one. 58 What we ask for before incarnation is not to be happy or sad, idle or busy. Although we hope to fulfill our dreams of service and learning, we really ask of ourselves only one thing: to experience as fully as possible the earth plane and our incarnations. To focus upon changes skillful for the one who works to accelerate the rate of spiritual evolution. But we greatly encourage each to couch this focus upon change within the larger pie, in which you may see that there is a strong and substantial reason to trust and have faith in destiny. You have put yourself on this train. This trip is planned by you. You did not ask yourself to be happy or sad, to do well or to do poorly. 541, Chapter 15, The Devotionally Lived Life. Not at all. You asked yourself to experience this XR incarnation. This is your responsibility, to experience as fully as possible each moment. 59 If our responsibility is to experience life, then we are freed to rest in the plenty of the heart. The devotional life is built on this trust and this rest, as we cooperate with destiny and live for the day and the moment with knowledge that we will learn, and we will serve, and both opportunities will reliably come to us when we are ready. If an entity wishes to hear the voice of the Creator, to hear aloud the appropriate service described, it must wait for the rhythms of destiny to unfold in their spontaneous way. Nothing, including a surety of service, is intended for those within your plane of existence to hear and mark. Rather, the opportunity is instantaneous, and it is the entity who has surrendered all private desires to respond to the situation, not questioning whether it be one's service, but moving from a position of spiritual abundance and rest to trust in the spontaneous opportunity for service at the level of instinct. The appropriate meditation, then, upon the will of the one infinite Creator, is the trustful relaxation into apparent ignorance. 60. Being part of a spiritual community as far back as history records, we can read of groups of people gathering to share community and worship. As our current traditional religious systems have faded in their magnetic pull for awakening spiritual seekers, seekers have tended to look for alternative forms of spiritual community. The internet offers millions the chance to talk with those who have common interests, and some of these groups can constitute spiritual communities or lighthouses. Those of you who attest to the enhanced power that is a group's resource. Talking to our meditation and study group, they said in 1999, "You have become an infinite power for love and light, and this is a resource that we are glad that you are taking part in. Not only because we feel close to each of you as we meditate with you, but also because we have heard the sorrow of the brothers and sisters upon your planet, and we know that the light energy that you gather in groups such as this will have a great healing effect upon the suffering of the world as a whole." 61 All sorts of people, such as this holistic light center manager, are trying to form light groups. 542, Chapter 15, The Devotionally Lived Life. My work of service is right now bringing more and more light workers together in this area. It is quite an experience to meditate together. 62 We at LL Research have also found it to be quite an experience to meditate together. When people decide to come visit us, their basic question to us is, "What do you do?" Romy Borel's request is very thorough. In meditation last night the suggestion came that I should come visit you. What do you do there? Can you help me in my efforts to become on purpose? Do you teach there? Have classes of some sort? ? 63 To answer that question, we do welcome guests. They may come any Sunday from Labor Day to Memorial Day, for a public group meditation and study meeting. We have silent meditations on second and fourth Sundays, and channeling meditations on first and third Sundays. Fifth Sundays, we take off. People may come, if they are among the registrants, for our annual homecoming. And if there is a special need, they may come and check us out at any time they are able to make the trip. We live in Kentucky, which from either coast and most other places is the back of beyond. We keep that in mind and open our home to those who feel they need to make into physically. What we do at L.L. Research, though, is live a devotional life. That is, we attempt to live devotionally. We consider at this point that our main service is being, both as individuals and as a light group. We keep our prayers and services daily, keep the light shining insofar as we are able in our hearts, intents and irons, and look for the love in the moment. It has been a long time since we have felt we have anything specific to teach. What we see, over and over again, is that any place which has become a spiritual lighthouse or center, such as ours and many others are for people around the globe, becomes a magical entity. Seekers come with transformation and realization on their minds to L.L. Research's physical doors, and they may well feel that wonderful things happen to them during their visits here. But from our standpoint we are able to see that they bring the transformations with them, and allow them to happen here, because they perceived that the gardens of L.L. are a safe place to do that work. I hope and pray they are indeed safe, for all who come. We do offer classes of a sort, at the annual homecomings, according to the wishes of our group for each particular meeting, and at the weekly study and meditation groups, also strictly according to the requests of the members present. We are most delighted to talk with people either at the meetings or on visits, or through correspondence. I spend most mornings working on correspondence, and find it most illuminating to work with the various people I meet. Jim also corresponds. 543, Chapter 15, The Devotionally Lived Life with a Wide Variety of Wanderers. Between us, we attempt to respond to everyone who writes to us. Our chief gift is sheer presence and being. We are here, we delight in being here. It is our privilege, and we hope to walk this watchtower as long as we are incarnate. As Jim and I age, we are as aware as ever of the possibility of increasing our little community physically. We have attempted physical community once since Don Elkin's death, with Kim Harris, in 1990 through 1991. Kim greatly helped us at L.L., but moved on. We recently had another candidate for inclusion in L.L. Research, a man who has spent 8 years attending our weekly meetings and studying the material we have to offer, a man who runs our computers and administrates our website, a man we love very deeply and appreciate. He thoughtfully turned us down. We were rather expecting this, for we know how daunting that prep is, since we have both made that momentous and life-changing decision to join a non-earthly family. Sacrifice is always involved in a move to physical community. We are quite aware there is no clear advantage to someone's joining us, in any worldly sense. Going from independence of living to community participation and duties involves a shakedown cruise for the new family members. The new member's workload would increase, as his lifestyle would change from eating when he wished to having regular community mealtimes, and doing for one to living in a home with fast-growing weeds and community needs that exceed his own personal requirements. Without inspiration, without deep commitment and a solid sense of rightness to the life path, it is not logically or emotionally feasible. The only advantages for such a new member would be the boons of spiritual community, support and encouragement in daily devotional prices, and the strengthening of each group member's offering of self to the Creator. It is the nature of a funional community to find ever more ways to foster and nourish, nurture and support each other. And as one finds such a community and enters into communion with those in that community, there is a strengthening and a stability which becomes possible only as entities group together and offer themselves for that which is greater than they are. 64 Group meditation is a wonderful part of that communion within community. As you sit together physically in the silence of this shared imaging, there is set up betwixt the group lines of communication that will not stop humming when the conscious minds leave that tabernacle of asking, for after the choice is made and destiny is being followed, yet still, there are, 544, chapter 15, the devotionally lived life choices every moment that work towards harmonizing energies or do not. And every shared moment in this holy silence together is productive of deepening and ever clearer channels of communication which are blessed with a more informed viewpoint, that of your higher selves, and aids in information, and that higher self that is you as a group. 65 Group meditations always seem to me to be very much more powerful than individual meditations, although certainly some times of solitary silence are tremendously inspiriting. The group's blending lifts all members, as it helps each to rest in faithful surrender. And for the many thousands of seekers who have appreciated our books and our presence through the years, our existence gives to them a place to belong, and even a time to join in a group meditation if they like, for we always begin to meditate at 5 o'clock in the evening on Sundays, Eastern Standard or Daylight Time, depending on the season. Many people around the world join us in those meditations, and some join Jim's and my daily offering each morning at 9 o'clock. These, too, are ways that a community of light can serve a world increasingly aware of its need for fuller light. It has been our experience that anyone can become a light center, simply by opening her home to some sort of study or meditation meeting on a regular basis. Think about what you may have to offer, if you are drawn to this asp of a devotional life. For many other people who are searching for an honest and sincere group with which to link, the desire to serve is greatly enhanced by those who have banded together in order to support each other in service. So the community feeds entities, and at the same time entities feed into community by their participation in the Uivites seen and unseen, by their sharing with others that which they have thought and talked about in community. It is as though there were a net being made of golden thread, and each time one awakened wanderer links up with another and establishes a spiritual community, another piece of the net is woven, and eventually that net will cover your orb like a golden seine, and the earth shall be completely surrounded in unified love. We see this occurring at this time. It is moving towards fuller manifestation rather quickly as more and more entities awaken and establish koans and share with others their own focal points or spiritual communities, so that more and more entities may feel secure and stable and part of something that is higher and bigger than the everyday concerns of living, for truly these concerns are constant throughout third density experience. It is completely up to each seeker as to how she wishes to express the self and the love of the Infinite One in each person of the daily round. 66, 545, Chapter 15, The Devotionally Lived Life. It matters not in the slightest to the Creator, I think, whether we are offering ourselves as individuals or as a group, as Christians or as Buddhists or as nothing in particular. What matters is that we wish to live our lives in faith, devotionally, seeing all things as sacred aspects of one experience that resounds with echoes of the Creator. If we can trust that echoing, resonant chamber of awareness into which we have poured ourselves for this experience, we shall find our lives fill up with beauty and deep rhythm, and the feeling of peace that lies beneath dependency and trust in the outer bayou, and rests with the heart at peace in flowing and unconditional love. May we find our hearts opening, and our lives becoming sacred to our own eyes. 546, Chapter 15, The Devotionally Lived Life. 3, 169, Letter dated March 23, 1998. Romy Borel, Chapter 16, L'Envoy, The Sending. As I write these words, the dog days of summer shine down upon Kentucky. 6 months writing has allowed me to finish this collection of gems of thought from discarnate entities and other thoughtful writers. Working with these wonderful ideas and principles has lifted me up and taught me much, and I hope that each reader has found some good resources and solid assets in these pages. But I hope more, I sincerely hope that each of us strongly feels a new level of commitment to the service and ministry of being and essence for which we took incarnation. I am not calling us out of the world to some retreat from civilization. I see great value in the illusion this world gives us to enjoy. I am calling us to stay within the world and enjoy it for what it is, to be those who fully realize that they are in the world but not of the world. I am calling us to live in the rush hour of life as we experience it right now, with a mind to encouraging the growing realization of the sacredness of these very moments. I am calling us to the life of the open heart. I am calling us to our own style of worship, devotion, Guyan, creation, outrageousness, commitment or adoration, whatever living from the open heart causes to occur within each of us. I am calling us to the cheerful embracing of hard times, when they come, in the faith that this is part of a good plan. True worshipful living is a high-risk occupation. It is not a loop into the light, but rather a loop into darkness. The illusion creates an emotional, mental and spiritual twilight in which ideals, the purification of emotions from attachments, and the mindfulness of continuing awareness of the worship bloom in the darkness of blind faith. That is, the true worship is worship of a mystery, or, wonder, a greater and greater sublime feeling of being held firmly by that which is not illusion, although one cannot understand it, so that the entity rests at last in a completely sublime and sublimely truthful journey. In this regard, worship may be seen as motion of a metaphysical kind rather than a physical kind. 1. I do not encourage and send us forth on a holiday cruise but on a shakedown voyage on a boat whose seaworthiness is as unproven as are we. We will suffer as we become more real to ourselves. We are after our unique truth, our own mystery and our personal path to the Creator and to worship. My belief system will not suffice for another, another's will not. 549, Chapter 16, L'Envoyé, The Sending Satisfy Me. What we can do for each other is encourage each other in our mutually honest and unremitting search, the committed journey. This commitment is a living thing. I wonder if any of us, at the beginning of a large promise, realizes the extent of the vows we have made. In 1991, our meditation group at L.L. Research was asking about the issue of commitment. Those of you who replied, we ask each of you in all earnestness when each of you first said, I commit myself to a life of service in this particular way, was there some special, permanent, unusual commitment, a commitment that took you from your humanity and made you into some entity with no capacity to do anything but keep that commitment? We ask you to look at this question very carefully. Can you not see, my friends, the absolute dedication of yourselves at that moment to the task of a lifetime, but the absolute ignorance in that moment of dedication of what sacrifices would have to be made to create a common path of service? Two times of sacrifice, confusion and disaster can befall us as we attempt deeply to dedicate ourselves to serve the light. Some challenges can discourage us, and some stop us cold. Each time we feel our legs go out from under us in terms of knowing what we are doing, we enter into a desert of doubt. And yet, we remain still called, still full of the desire to serve the people and the planet of Earth. At this moment, I personally call all of us out of all deserts, to recommit ourselves to the great and single task of loving Earth, of breathing in, breathing out, and finding ways to live in peace and in gentleness upon the mantle of our Mother Earth, of meeting each moment with a heart flowing with the Creator's unconditional, infinite love. Our quest is set against a backdrop of incongruities. We are awkward beings here, we for whom this book has been gathered and written. As author, I have been writing to two awakened groups of people who seem to be the same to me in their energy and problems, their spirit and their gifts. The wanderers and walk-ins from higher densities who have wandered back into this third density in order to help lighten the planet, and the mature Earth natives who as spiritual beings are eager and ready to move on to higher densities, and remain at this time in third density only to join in the work of lightening the planetary vibration. Together, we make what Dana Redfield calls a kind of fifth column. The soul is an alien in the world, without name or number. A conspiracy is afoot, souls gathering in the wings of tomorrow, meeting in the invisible college, snatched up by UFOs, returned to form a fifth. 550, Chapter 16, L'Envoyé, the sending column, the trunk of a new tree rising up in the center of the world, the cosmic serpent uncoiling, a story in the secret book of life. 3. Our wanderer's mindset tends to be alienated whether we are Earth natives or ETs, and this very awkwardness and athwartness is our great gift to the world. We are much harder to hypnotize. As we awaken to our spiritual identities as citizens of eternity, we begin to pull away from the details of the tangle of anger and territory, power and influence that reigns in the nations of Earth, and we begin to see into the energies of chaos and darkness behind each firing gun, each prison cell stopped against an innocent, each child starving because of policy. We begin to see that there is indeed a dragon of negativity. It is lashing its tail here in Earth's third density, and sometimes the energy of negativity is so intense, it is easy to believe that the dark is winning. Then we must stop upon our weary journey and rest. As the seeker gazes down at the dusty road, at the dust that lies upon his feet and covers his sandals, he may well doubt that road and doubt the security and the promise of the journey of seeking. The staff which is intended to aid may become heavy, and even those few belongings which the seeker has to carry with him begin to seem a great burden. And so the seeker sometimes removes himself from the dusty path which seems to go on forever. The seeker moves into a beautiful valley, well watered and forested with pastures where spring the small animals and where the sweet flowers bloom. It is good for the seeker to rest in such a beautiful meadow and smell the beautiful scent of flower and bush, and to rest beneath the nurturing and sturdy trunk of one of your trees. Because, you see, my friends, to go upon the journey is to become terribly vulnerable. It is to risk all for no obvious reward, for as you seek, so you shall be sought. As you polarize more and more towards the light, so your dedication to that light shall be challenged. The toll the journey takes upon the seeker is never the same from one seeker to another. And when the burden becomes too heavy, it is good that the individual seeker choose his own pasture and measure his own time of recovery. 4. As I call us to send ourselves into the world's ripe harvest of souls with only our silent beingness in love for the work, I would sound the request for our most tender regard for our own energies and our determination to pace and relax into this long work. Soapboxes and words solve nothing. All people will awaken according to their own timing. It does not help to proselytize.